Perhaps the best way to understand what Lambesis did is to go back to what sociologists call the diffusion model, which is a detailed academic way of looking how a contagious idea or product or innovation moves through a population. One of the most famous diffusion studies is Bruce Ryan and Neil Gross's analysis of the spread of hybrid seed corn in Greene County, Iowa in the 1930s. The new corn seed was introduced in Iowa in 1928, and it was superior in every respect to the seed that had been used by farmers for decades before. But it wasn't adopted all at once. Of the 259 farmers studied by Ryan and Gross, only a handful had started planting the new seed by 1932 and 1933. In 1934, 16 took the plunge. In 1935, 21 followed, then 36, and the year after that a whopping 61, and then 46, 36, 14, and 3, until by 1941, all but two of the 259 farmers studied were using the new seeds. In the language of diffusion research, the handful of farmers who started trying hybrid seed at the very beginning of the 1930s were the innovators, the adventurous ones. The slightly larger group who were infected by them were the early adopters. They were the opinion leaders in the community, the respected, thoughtful people who watched and analyzed what those wild innovators were doing and then followed suit. Then came the big bulge of farmers in 1936, 1937, and 1938, the early majority and the late majority, the deliberate and the skeptical mass, who would never try anything until the most respected of farmers had tried it first. They caught the seed virus and passed it on, finally, to the laggards, the most traditional of all, who saw no urgent reason to change. If you plot that progression on a graph, it forms a perfect epidemic curve. Starting slowly, tipping just as the early adopters start using the seed, then rising sharply as the majority catches on, before falling away at the end when the laggards come straggling in. What Lambesis did with their campaign for Airwalk was to try to take a brand that had been worn entirely by innovators and run it through this diffusion process, introducing it to early adopters and then the early majority, and finally, when the shoes exploded, the late majority. This is easier said than done, of course. It doesn't take much to see that trying to get a pair of sneakers into the mainstream in a market crowded with sneakers is an awful lot more difficult than getting farmers to try an obviously superior type of hybrid seed. In fact, the closer you look at the diffusion model, the trickier the actual process of contagion begins to seem. Innovations don't just slide effortlessly from one group to the next. There is a chasm between them. In the case of Hush Puppies, the downtown Manhattan kids who rediscovered the brand were wearing the shoes because Hush Puppies were identified with a dated, kitschy, ironic 50s image. They were wearing them precisely because no one else would wear them. What they were looking for in fashion was a revolutionary statement. They were willing to take risks in order to set themselves apart. But most of us in the early and late majority don't want to make a revolutionary statement or take risks with our fashion at all. So how on earth did Hush Puppies cross the chasm from one group to the next? You could say the same of Airwalk. Lambesis was given a shoe that had a very specific appeal to the Southern California skateboarding subculture. Their task was to make it hip and attractive to teenagers all over the world, even teens who had never skateboarded in their lives, who didn't think skateboarding was particularly cool, and who had no functional need for wide outsoles that could easily grip the board, and padded uppers to cushion the shocks of doing aerial stunts. That's clearly not an easy task. How did they do it? How is it that all the weird, idiosyncratic things that really cool kids do end up in the mainstream? This is where, I think, connectors, mavens, and salesmen play their most important role. In the section on the law of the few, I talked about how their special social gifts can cause epidemics to tip. Here, though, it is possible to be much more specific about what they do. They are the ones who make it possible for innovations to overcome this problem of the chasm. They are translators. They take ideas and information from one highly specialized world and translate them into a language the rest of us can understand. One of the key figures at the Lambesis advertising agency was Dee Dee Gordon, the firm's former head of market research, and she says that the same process occurs in the case of fashion trends that periodically sweep through youth culture. The innovators try something new. Then someone, the teen equivalent of a maven or a connector or a salesman, sees it and adopts it. Those kids make things more palatable for mainstream people. They see what the really wired kids are doing and they tweak it. They start doing it themselves, but they change it a bit. They make it more usable. Maybe there's a kid who rolls up his jeans and puts duct tape around the bottom because he's the one bike messenger in the school. Well, the translator likes that look, but he won't use tape. He'll buy something with Velcro. Or then there was the whole baby doll t-shirt thing. One girl starts wearing a shrunken down t-shirt. She goes to Toys R Us and buys the Barbie t-shirt. And the others say, that's so cool. But they might not get it so small, and they might not get it with Barbie on it. They look at it and say, it's a little off. But there's a way I can change it and make it okay. Then it takes off. If someone wants to start an epidemic then, whether it is of shoes or behavior, they have to somehow employ connectors, mavens, and salesmen. They have to find some person or some means to translate the message of the innovators into something the rest of us can understand.